Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast, and I'm your host, Austin. This week, we're going to talk a little bit first about the weather finally breaking and what that's going to lead to, which is obviously more training. Here in Michigan, we're probably one of the last states to really see the warm up every year. A lot of you guys are in the middle of the country in the south. You probably break into the high 40s, and the 50s. Much earlier than we do, but we're finally hitting the 50 degree weather up here. And what that means for us is the beginning of the spring season now that we're in the middle of March. And that means we can get outdoors, we can do more, right? It's not that you can't train effectively in the cold winter months, but you are limited with what you can do, especially as it comes to things like firearms training, because the body, the mechanics, response times, the muscles, I mean, there's a whole lot of science, right, that goes into all that. But as it's that cold out, you're not really going to be working on draws from concealment and really being able to push times. You're really not going to be able to spend a whole lot of time out there running around shooting drills. And I mean, you can. Like, I'm not saying that you can't do it, right? I'm just saying that you're not going to get the most reward out of it that you would probably like to for the effort and discomfort. And you're probably also better served working on other skills during the winter months here in Michigan. Things like, yes, maybe like some cold weather survival, radio, medical, things like that. Or maybe it's a time when you want to learn how to build a rifle or take a class online for gunsmithing, or, you know, don't go to SDI. I've heard nothing but horrible things about that, but it is an opportunity to maybe utilize some gift cards from Christmas and stuff, right? Spend the time indoors learning how to build a rifle or fix a rifle or troubleshoot some issues, things like that. But I digress. The springtime, we start the thaw, which still makes it a little bit iffy on what you can and can't do. It just depends on range conditions. Like, our range here in Michigan is great for a lot of things. One of the things they're not great about, to be completely honest, is changing out the backers at each individual bay. So it kind of limits what we can do, because you do the right things, right? And you plan out a range day and you get out there and then you see that the backers are blown to shit and all the good ones are taken by people. So you have to pivot and you find a way to jerry rig one up. I know we had a buddy that had a fake cat tourniquet in his kit once and used that to tie together the leg of one of these backers because it had been blown to bits by somebody using a shotgun, which, by the way, you're not supposed to use at our range. They have patterning boards and stuff that are specifically for that, and people just, you know, all it takes is one asshole to ruin it for everybody else, right? So, but spring's here, so we can start spending more time outside, starting to focus on some of these skill sets. Specifically, one of the things that I've really tried to get more well-read on and learn more about is precision shooting, right? So not just being accurate as we would evaluate it maybe at the 10 to 50 yard range on the flat range or running drills and transitions and things like that, but specifically talking about building a precision platform. So something that might be more commonly referred to as like a special purpose rifle or special purpose receiver. That's how it started life. You guys don't believe me, go freaking look it up. We did a budget build video on YouTube, which, you guys haven't seen it, you should go check it out. It seems like a lot of people liked it, but I was absolutely astounded how many folks wanted to stop and tell me in the comment section that excuse me, sure, didn't actually mean special purpose receiver, it's a rifle. And it's like, well, if you do your reading, it started off as a receiver, and yes, then it turned into the special purpose rifle. But I mean, of all the things on the internet you could argue about, that one word, and it's not even the full word, like, whatever. It's absolute idiocy. But if you guys have been hanging out on the interwebs for a while, you know that that's kind of what we do. We just, you know, fight with each other, we eat our own, and at the end of it, we come out with absolutely nothing other than just, you know, confirmation bias or... I don't know, maybe some people really get off on that. If that's your thing, like, hey, good for you, man. But speaking of precision shooting, that is what we are talking about in this week's discussion. As I've explored the realm more, gotten into it more, I understand that there's different tools, there's different needs. The solutioning is just different when you're building maybe a rifle or something that is specific to that kind of an application. Reaching out to long distances, understanding the deviation and impact and all those things, right, to go with not only building a rifle, but when you're shooting something like that at distance, especially with a standardized round like a, you know, 5.56 or something, we're not always going to be in the situation where we can have a nice loaded down 308 bolt gun on a sled. God, right? Where we can comfortably take our time and place that real precise shot, or even some of these larger, heavier guns you see in the competition space. Was it PRI or PRS shooting? I think it's PRS, where, you know, guys are running all over obstacles and sandbags and things like this, and doing all kinds of crazy stuff, which is, it's very cool. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying that when we look at the scope of being a prepared citizen, one is a different conversation than the other. It's not that both can't be effective and capable in different and unique ways and have their own benefits. That also means that they have their own detractors. I'm just saying that knowing what you're building, knowing why you're building it is, I think, a necessary part of the equation, and not something that should be left for after the fact when you spend, you know, thousands of dollars potentially, only to turn around and go, what the hell happened here? I spent all this money and I have a gun that I really, really like shooting, but I hate carrying and the ammo is so expensive, I can't train with it. Because I just listened to the homies on the internet that told me that I should go with some, you know, Gucci caliber that can't be found. And I had to remortgage the house and all these things, right, to buy a $5,000 scope and, you know, a $15,000 rifle and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you can get really convoluted with this stuff really, really quickly in the precision space. So we're going to get into that. JT's going to sit down. He's back on. He's going to join me. I haven't talked to him, I think, since, I want to say it was last year when they took a swing at Donald Trump. We had a conversation here on the podcast breaking down his assessment of what may have gone on with the attempt on Donald Trump's life. But before we get to the discussion this week, before I get us over to my conversation with JT, we are a sponsored podcast. If this is your first time checking with us, you guys, welcome aboard. And we have some awesome companies that we partner with in the community that we want to make you aware of, because I know how hard you guys work for your money, and we want to do our best to steer our audience, our folks, our tribe, if you will, towards reputable companies that are going to take good care of them and give them the best bang for their buck. And for us, that starts with our friends over at Custom Night Vision. You guys, you can head to their website. It's customnightvision.com and see everything they are about there. So if you're not currently somebody who has night vision, I can't recommend a company more than Custom for all of your needs for a first-time purchase for night vision. So whether that's something where you're willing to take the big swing and get into something like a binocular or, you know, a dual tube setup, when guys say, oh, I'm getting duals, that's what they're talking about, or you're a little bit more on the budget-sided, which is what I did initially first and what many people do, and you get a binocular or a single tube device like a PVS-14 or a Tonto from Nocturne, right? CustomNightVision.com, you guys, they have solutions and options for both of those. So whether it is a single tube or a dual tube housing, they have a ton of options available to you. So like something like a fixed bridge offering, maybe a little bit older, but super, super durable, like the RNVGs from AB Night Vision. Maybe you want the latest, the greatest, the new cutting edge hotness that's out there. Maybe that's something like the MH1 from Lloyd Innovations, or the Manticore, or the molded Katana that just came out, both from, you know, Nocturne, or something in between. Maybe a set of DTNVS. There's a lot of options out there. There's a lot of choices you can make when you're purchasing night vision or getting a custom build done by the team over at Custom. And maybe you're saying, well, how am I going to do a custom build, Austin? I don't know what half this shit means. And that's totally okay. In fact, if you can go to the Custom Night Vision website, again, it's customnightvision.com, they have a chat function built into the lower right-hand corner of the website. So you can actually reach out and talk to Kevin. You can talk to Trevor or even Ben. And hey, you know, these are my questions. I'm looking at a dual tube housing, and I don't know what the pros and cons are here. This one, I think, looks really light, but that one's a little bit heavier. What am I giving up and what am I getting? Do I want green phosphor or white phosphor? What's the difference between, you know, between Elbit and L3, Photonis, right? What am I missing here? Can you help me make sense of all of this? And then they're there to provide the most transparent buying experience for you, the consumer. You guys, it's customnightvision.com. Go to the website, check it out for yourself, and pick up some night vision, because it is an absolute game changer, guys. Also want to say thank you to American Defense Manufacturing. Guys, if you're looking to get into a quality upper, a quality rifle, not even just the upper, American Defense Manufacturing, I cannot recommend them enough. Out of the brands I've used so far, I've had the best experience with the quality, the precision of the upper that was sent to me from the team over at ADM. Their website is ADMMFG.com. mod2lineup.com. You can head over there. You can check out their Mod 2 line of upper receivers. If you're looking for a whole rifle, sometimes guys go, hey, you know what? I've been training on this piece of junk that I spent $700 on. I'm ready to take the big hit, and I want to get something that I'm going to be able to run for the next 5-10 years and not have to worry about a bad trigger, parts just being out of spec, the wobble between the upper and the lower, right? That's where their rifles at ADM come into play here, you guys. Fantastic products, great QC, and something that you will absolutely not regret spending the money on, because when we're talking about precision rifles, this is the kind of thing that matters. So using quality components like ADM does, Criterion Core barrels and the like, it is a game changer. One more time, it's ADMMFG.com. Head on over, check it all out for yourself today. Also, I want to say thank you to Orion Training Group, you guys. Orion, specifically Jared and Jason, will be heading up here to the great state of Michigan in May for round two, if you will. They were here last year, but round two of their structure clearance course. So it'll be a two-day class out at our friends are at Battlefield CQB are hosting. But Orion is running the class. Got 17 spots available, and looking forward to learning how to, you know, properly clear structures, do CQB good, if you will. Guys, you can head on over to OrionTrainingGroup.com. That's their website, and you can see their entire course catalog for most of 2025. I think they may still be adding a couple of things towards the end of the year, but that kind of stuff fills up fast. And if you really want to know who these guys are, if you want to learn more about the cadre there, you can learn about all of the cadre, all of the instructors, the great group of individuals that they have teaching things from comms to medical to precision carbine, and the list goes on, you guys. It's OrionTrainingGroup.com. Fantastic bunch of individuals, many of whom have been on this podcast, and love every one of them. And last but certainly not least, we want to say thank you to 100 Concepts, you guys. The company motto, of course, do good, be dangerous, live free. Fantastic group of humans that are doing their best to bring some outstanding solutions and products to the marketplace for folks like you and me that want to be better prepared and more capable out in the field. So we did a great interview with Jonah a while back. Jonah's one of the owners of 100, and talked specifically about, you know, the principles of camouflage and how they launched 100 and why they addressed the certain products and problems that those products fixed, right, the way that they did. It's a really, really cool story, very well thought out products. I think you're starting to realize that with how many companies are now popping up in your Facebook ads and your Instagram ads, mimicking and copying their designs for things like their scope caps, their flashlight caps. Great, great group of dudes, you guys. It's 100concepts.com. Go check out the website for yourself today. Pick up some new gear, and you're going to love it, I promise. But like I said, this week I'm sitting down with JT. We are getting into precision gas gun. We might talk some bolt gun stuff, you guys. I can't help that it bleeds into the conversation when we're talking about precision and accuracy. That's usually, I think, the more we'll get into it, but it's probably the better platform if accuracy is your only consideration. However, we're not, or that isn't, I should say. It's not our only consideration. We're going to be considered. I don't even know what I'm saying here, guys. We're going to consider things like mobility, overall barrel length and effect on the round and things like that. Gas system, yes, maybe even the particular round that we talk about, because I know there's a lot of hemming and hawing between 308, 6.5 Creedmoor. Can 5.56 be, do the air quotes, the just as good, right? Is it really got to be something where it's a gas gun, or is a bolt gun that much better? What kind of optics and magnification are we going to get into? And then maybe even some skill set stuff too, because I think that there's a lot to be said for understanding how to take a well-built rifle, right? Something that's specifically put together for applications that we're talking about here, precision and accuracy, maybe like a sniper or an Overwatch role, right? And do you know how to be effective with it? Do you know how to maneuver around barricades and position yourself for maximum stability? Because honestly, if you guys have ever tried it, you know, the slightest amount of physical input can cause deviation on your target, especially as you open that distance up longer, right? So past 50 yards, past 70 yards, further out to 250, right? And in a lot of instances, maybe that's not going to be what is necessarily your case or consideration. I'm sure we'll get into that. I know we've talked about it to at least some degree in the past on this podcast with JT, right? you know, most of your shots as a LE, you know, SWAT sniper are within, you know, this distance. But that doesn't mean that all of them will be, and you have to be ready and accountable for what's going to happen with all of that. So really cool discussion, I think. I'm looking forward to it. I'm always, you know, happy to touch bases and on a chat with JT as well. Great guy. But let's get into it, you guys. I'm sure you're eager to hear about it. Welcome back, man. How's it going?
It's going good, man. I always, always, always enjoy the invitation. So anytime we have some kind of topic we can bullshit about, you know, I'm always your dude to invite on.
Well, and so we were talking about this just a second ago, but it's become more popular, I guess, in the community, right? Like this, the precision gas gun, not not by that name. I think there's a lot of acronyms that get thrown around, like SPRs and recce rifle or GPR, stuff like that. And it all kind of, I think it kind of boils down, and I don't know what your opinion is. I think it kind of boils down to the same shit. It just depends on how you use it. You know, like we were talking about it, right? The SPR, is it a special purpose rifle or is it special purpose receiver?
Yeah, I don't care.
It really doesn't make a damn bit of difference. Dude, if that's what you're picking out of the discussion, I think you're missing the point fucking completely.
Well, and you're probably going to be one of those guys that never actually gets out there and competes or shoots the thing, because you're going to be so consumed with what actually goes into a SPR and a recce rifle. And so I've got to make sure it does this and this and has this piece of gear and that and that. And no, just what do you have? Go out there and start competing. You can add all that stuff later. Go out there and start competing. You're going to finish last when you start anyways. So it doesn't matter. You're going to finish last for a while.
The hard truth. Yeah. I mean, yeah, if the skill set's not there. And if the skill set is there, you're probably not worried about the minutia of what you named your rifle.
No, like I said, I would take my 308 gasser that I deployed with my first team, and I would run it the same setup that I had then. I would same setup now. And even though I have some experience in the long range game, I'm still going to go out there and finish last for a long time. It just like I did when I started USPSA.
Well, but it's different though too. I think that the competitive shooting, there's a level of like gaming the stage, you know, that guys like it's, you know, it's sure. Like, what is it IPSC or whatever maybe it's USPS. I don't know. The concealed shooter, circuit
where you can run it. I think you can run your concealed pretty much in all of them.
Yeah. And guys just put a big old fucking 511 vest on and they're like, oh, see,
oh,
I'm
drawing. No, that one with the vest is IPSC. Yeah. Like you can run your like normal EDC concealed rig in USPSA and PCSL. But IPSC specifically has the vest requirement and
yeah,
no thanks.
It's like, dude, are you really gonna shoot or you know, wear that vest out in public every day? Is that really your method of concealment? Like,
no, I'm gonna wear that to my precision. I'm gonna show up with the old 70-year-old man with his fishing vest and the 511 cargos. Like I showed up to the wrong match, shooting precision rifle.
Yeah, it's just you know, and there, not that there's not, you know, value in competition. I haven't done it yet, but maybe I should. But I think, you know, if we're talking about people wanting to learn about this, I think it's a good idea. I think it's also good though to understand, like, for as much as shooting, the way you set up your rifle, I think, and build your rifle, right, can have a huge impact on what your end goal is, right? Obviously, you know, a 10.5-inch gun, if you're trying to shoot, you know, 1,000 yards, maybe not the best choice. Doable, right? Perhaps, but you know, not the best choice for a lot of different reasons. So I think it might be helpful for folks just to understand, because you know, you see so much shit out there. Guys are like, oh, if you want you know, quote unquote, like an SPR platform, something built with bigger glass, right? You're gonna be stationary when you shoot it. I think there's like an overall assumption that it has to be like an 18-inch barrel, and you know, maybe you should be looking at like 308 or something, where, you know, I think 5.56 is fine. If you want something AR-10,
I want to get into the 5.56 long range game. I don't have any experience in it. All of my experience comes with 308 and I love it, but at my current department, I can't use my personal rifle like I could at my first one. So I'm going to have to adapt and use. I work myself and one of my supervisors are actually talking about taking one of our or a couple of our patrol rifles that are just your stock SIG 16 inches and rebarreling them and maybe throw in a, like a Vortex 3-18 something 3-15 something like that on top of it and start playing around with the long range on the 5.56 side. So it just whichever one you want.
Does
If it doesn't really matter, to be honest with you.
it? I mean, well, I mean, you're gonna get different performance, though. I think it's your point. It doesn't matter with the understanding that one's gonna be able to do things a little bit differently than the
No,
other.
no. My point is, whichever one you're interested in, like, go do that.
Well, because I think there's this concept out there right now that guys throw around a lot, and I love it and I hate it, is like this idea of a general purpose rifle. And it's not a military designation like an SPR or a DMR or whatever. I think it's honestly, I think it's an internet designation. I think guys just came up with it to, feel spicy about their rifle. But guys want to find one rifle that's going to do everything really well. And it's really not a thing. I mean, you can do almost anything with any rifle, but it's not going to do everything super well. I think, you see a lot of focus on 13.9s and 14.5s, and guys are getting into like that's like the ultra desirable, like 2 to 10, right? What the Mark V, I think Leopold makes. You see that floating around a lot because it gives you almost 1x magnification, right? But then it also gives you 10x, and it does it better than like some of those 1 to 10s out there. And I think that we get really tied up in some of that. Like, even as I'm saying it, I'm like, this sounds kind of dumb as I'm
Yeah, I
saying
think
it.
there's. I think people get kind of tied up in the minutiae. I can relate it to the fitness world a little bit. If everybody doesn't know, I come from that background before policing, and it's like in the powerlifting world, everything is centered around your bench press, your deadlift, and your squat, and everybody gets hung up in this like assistance work. Like, hey, what kind of assistance work should I be doing for this kind of stuff? And it you're one of my favorite. Guys that I've learned a lot from, he calls it majoring in the minor. And that's what that is to me. When you get hung up in that much minutia, you're just majoring in the minor and you're just so focused on such small things that it's like perfection is the enemy of good, right? Eventually you're going to have to pick something and just start using it. And to me, the more things that I want my general purpose rifle to do, that's more stuff I've got to add on to it. Like, am I gonna make a gun that can a six a good 16 inch barrel that can also I can also take indoors. So I'm gonna need a magnified optic, some kind of red dot. Do I have night vision? So I need a light and laser too. Something that can do IR, a white light. What else do you want to throw a bubble level on that too? You
Bipod.
know, yeah, bipod. You want one of the cool super Gucci bipods that does a great job of like leveling the gun for you, so you don't have to do anything. Like, how much stuff are you going to add to it before you actually start to use it? So
And you have to
I don't,
carry all of that shit too, which is the last thing anybody
yeah,
ever fucking thinks about. Like, dude,
right.
check this thing out. And it weighs like 28 pounds. You're like, dude,
That's
I do not want to
the
fuck with
thing.
that.
Like, for those of you that haven't listened to me, the past episodes I've been on, my sniper experience on the LE side was like almost exclusively on the urban side, and there's a lot of movement from positions to positions. For example, we had deployed one night looking for a suspect we thought had entered an abandoned house, but it was in a group of a lot of abandoned houses. So my entry team, my assaulters are moving from house to house to house to clearing, and I'm moving with them providing mobile overwatch. Well, the more equipment that I take and the heavier my rifle is, the more problematic that's going to be long term. So is it cool to have all of those gadgets on there? Absolutely. Do they help? I'm sure they do. But are they 100% necessary to me in that position? No. So it's bipod 4-16 and offset red dot for me was what I ran. And even now there wouldn't be that much I'd probably add to it.
And
So it
that was a 308 for you, right?
308, 16 inch. And again, and you can argue barrel lengths. Obviously, the longer the barrel, the more muzzle velocity you get out of it. Absolutely, no argument there. But again, the distances I was shooting, I don't need a 20-inch barrel. I was under a minute of angle most of the times, close to half minute of angle at the distances I shoot in the urban side, all the time. So I didn't need a 20. 16 was just fine. If you think that if you're going to be up on a mountain and you need that extra of muzzle velocity because you're shooting 1,000+ yards, then by all means get one. But don't major in the minor.
Yeah, I think that there's a like my brother's working on building out a rifle right now, or trying to he's taking like his M&P Sport 2, right? So like 16 inch, like 1 in 9, like just kind of a do all barrel, not that great, right? And okay, so he wanted to go to a 13.9, but then he ended up going with I think he's going to a 14.5 just because the handguard he bought doesn't line up or something. I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. I think both are fine options, especially considering like A, his relative shooting ability, which is kind of what we're talking about here. Like, if you can't, and this is not a dig on him, it's just being honest. Like, hey man, how much time have you spent outside of the 50-yard range? And if the answer is none, then okay, cool, then you're not going to be that limited by your barrel or maybe by your ammo, but probably not. You're not, even your optic isn't going to limit you that much when you're that inexperienced. I think that, like, I had to do this. I had to have my guys push me to get out of that and get away from 50 yards and start reaching out to like 200. We actually have a precision rifle event at the range this weekend, so I can try going 600, which isn't incredibly far, but it's a
It's
lot
further,
farther
yeah, it's
than,
further than you
yeah.
have shot. It's something that you'll need data on, right? So yeah, that 600 is nothing to laugh at all.
No, I mean, and it's totally doable with something probably a 12.5 if you had to, 13.9, 14.5, 16, it all plays,
I
I
have a
think.
personally owned 14.5, and if my department would let me use that for some of the Overwatch stuff that I do now. That's what I would take, whether it was the most optimal thing or not, it doesn't matter. That's what I would be using. I'm going to go out there and figure out how to make it work. Like, what do I need to do to make it work, right? And what do I need to rebarrel it with a better barrel? Will that help? What ammo does it like? I'll just play with a bunch of different types of ammo, but that's what I would use. And people can, you should at least have an 18. Well, I'm No, I have a 14.5, so that's what I'm going to use because that's what I would use at work.
Yeah,
So,
and it's not, I don't think for that inch and a half that you're losing off the barrel, you're not losing that much velocity. It's not like you're going from like a 10.5 to a 13.9, right? Where you'd be dropping that much. I guess if you'd have to be smart enough, right, to understand the use case you're building for, right? So if you expect to be shooting out to 500 all the time because that's just what your role is and your particular job, whether that's military or you're a civilian that lives in the middle of nowhere, then fine, get a longer barrel, but figure out a way to move the damn thing. Or if you're like the rest of us that live in suburbia, it probably doesn't matter as much as you think it does.
No,
Realistically.
I'm again, yeah, and it just depends on what you might find yourself doing. Are you taking trips to hunt in the mountains with
Yeah.
long distances? Then by all means, buy the longer barrel. It just depends on the environment you find yourself in and what you're going to be using it for. All that stuff comes into play. It doesn't have to
And
be set up like in this really cool guy way if it doesn't need to be.
well, and there's options. I mean, like, I think we get hung up on a couple on, what's the right length. We also get hung up on brand name. And that's, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, there's some out there that makes some, like, Criterion makes a damn good barrel. I think everybody knows Criterion makes really good barrels. Ballistic Advantage, a little bit more affordably priced, still a pretty good barrel, relative to some of the other junk that's floating around out there that isn't going to be as good. So yeah, I mean, you could spend 400 plus. You could spend more than that. I'm not even sure what a really expensive barrel, above Criterion or whatever would be, but I'm sure it exists out there, right? You get into like, and I don't know, is that you guys were never able to like build your own rifles with the teams you were on. It was kind of just, this is what we have, right?
So you had two options. So when I first got on that team, they had Accuracy International bolt guns with 20-inch barrels and Night Force 5-25s. And they are phenomenal rifles. Don't get me wrong. And I spoke about this in the very in one of the episodes, I
It
think,
was the
where we
first,
talked, maybe the first one. And they're great rifles. Don't get me wrong. But they're super heavy, and I did not want to get caught in a gunfight if I got compromised with a really, really heavy rifle that only has five rounds in it in the magazine that I've got a chamber, myself. So I started to gravitate towards the idea of a gas gun that it was more all purpose or more general purpose than my bolt guns. So you could just stick with that, which a lot of people did, and they still have those rifles. I still talk to some of the guys that are still on the SWAT team or still on that team. Or you could use your own as long as you qualified with it. I don't think that. I mean, it had to be from somebody reputable. It couldn't be some Frankenstein gun that you threw together. But you had options. Yeah, I mean, so like mine, I didn't do anything with it. I didn't do anything special with mine. Mine is a Lands Ang Tactical 16-inch. The company's not in business anymore, but it's a workhorse gun. And the only thing I did was it's overgassed out of the box. All I did was put a adjustable gas block on it, so I could run it suppressed, and that's pretty much it. That's the only tinkering I did with it. I think I went with another bolt carrier. I tried different bolt carrier groups, some of like the nickel boron and things like that to see what could handle the carbon buildup a little bit better, because obviously you get way more carbon with your gassers. But that was pretty much it. So yeah, you had some options depending on what route you wanted to go. Some people wanted to spend money, some people didn't. I don't mind spending money.
But the inherently, right, the bolt gun's going to give you more accuracy. It's
So
just limited number
traditionally,
areas.
yes, and it's mainly because of it's less moving parts,
Right.
right? So with our AR style platforms, there's just so much stuff going on, and so those things are just moving all the time. Even so much as your handguard to your the whole upper receiver is multiple parts. Everything's moving, whereas with your bolt guns, you don't have a lot of moving parts in anything. So traditionally, yes, there was a large gap. That gap has shortened quite a bit. I would still put your bolt guns, ahead, but that gap has shortened so much, at least in my opinion, that given the option, I'm still going to pick the gas gun every time. And I enjoy shooting them. I enjoy shooting the AR platform a lot more. And it's just personal preference. I never really enjoyed shooting bolt guns.
Too much recoil.
Yeah, that's
I mean, the first time I shot a bolt gun, my buddy, it was a 308. It was like a Ruger American Light or something. It was like, they full weight reduction because it was meant to be used for like backpacking and hiking and hunting right in the mountains. So there is no ass to this gun at all. And it was my first time shooting 308. I was like, this fucking sucks. And of course, he didn't even have like a shitty Amazon bipod on it. It was like at some range and like by the cabin up in northern Michigan that they have. And so you're using like these really crappy duct taped together like shooting bags and stuff. Like it was terrible. I'm like, man, how the fuck do you shoot this? And then you find out later, like he really doesn't. He only goes hunting like once every 3 or 4 years, and he's not a very good shot. And I'm like, okay, whatever. All right, cool.
So, yeah, so then none of that even matters anyways, because he can't shoot it.
Well, right. And I'm like, cool. Like, whatever. That was like my first taste of like larger calibers. And I ended up going, like, I did a 6.5 Creedmoor, like a 20-inch Weatherby bolt gun in 6.5 Creedmoor. Shot 20 rounds through it and then didn't touch it for 2.5 years and wound up just trading it in at the gun shop. So I was like, I fucking hate shooting this thing. There's nothing about this that like inspires me to go spend time at the range. Like, I
If
would
you
much
don't
rather
enjoy
get a
shooting
gas
it,
gun.
it's not going to be something that you are going to make the time to go shoot. So
No, and I didn't.
So if you're not interested in gas guns and you want to go build some cool SBR GPR kind of thing, then and that interests you and you will actually take it out to compete or to at least go, run it hard, then pick the thing that you enjoy.
Well, and you know, there's the advantages to it. Like you talked about with if you got caught in a gunfight, which I think if you put it, if you put the conversation in the frame of reference of like you said, a lot of your engagement distances were not hundreds and hundreds of yards. They were less than, you know, one than a minute of angle, right? That's a totally realistic distance to have a gunfight. I mean, it happened overseas, you know, with the military, right, during the war on terror all the time, where that's a gunfight. Is anything inside 100 yards? You know,
Yeah,
so
so I'll give some context, and I'm sure
yeah.
somebody will get mad at me for saying that statement. Every one of my deployments as a sniper with my old team, well, even now, they're a little bit few and far between now, but during my first team, we're all 200 and in. I only had two or three that were over 200 yards, and so to me, a good urban distance, and other people may disagree, it's fine, but like a good 200 and in for Ellie, I would even accept 300 and in as a good urban distance. That's where all of my deployments were, and so I did not want to get into a gunfight at 200 yards and in with a 5-round magazine, a heavy gun that was going to be hard to move from cover to cover, that I had to cycle myself. I'd much rather have the semi-auto, 20-round 308 that had the offset red dot, and I could do a lot of different things with it. So if I got compromised, and I have to throw this context in it as well, we did not have a lot of snipers on our team at that time, so almost everything I did was solo. And so no, I do not want to get into a gunfight by myself with that bolt gun. So what I ended up having to do a lot of times was put the bolt gun in my pack, and then deploy with my short barrel rifle, which then I had to take a little bit of a load out there because I got a little support that with some mags if I needed it. It was just extra
Right.
stuff. So I started to strip gear away a lot to just the bare minimum, and ended up again just going with that 16-inch gasser and a couple extra mags, and then a small backpack. And now I've got a ton more mobility, speed of security on a lot of things, even on the sniper side. So yeah, it again,
It's
what are you using it
and
for?
it's still funny, guys will actually still advocate for that as a solution where because I remember like an old Fieldcraft episode hearing Mike Glover talk about him and I'm pretty sure it was Kevin Owens. They'd carry like 10 and a half inch SBRs for building clearing, and when they get up to the roof they'd break out, you know, their 14.5 or whatever, like an SR25, right, a platform built for more distance. And it's like, cool, but then because we talked about fitness a moment ago, like how many guys can actually like physically, your rifle's what, let's say, I don't know, 12 pounds, maybe more depending on all the shit you put on it, right, on top of all the other ammo and gear you got to carry, are you going to be able to hoof it up three, four flights of stairs to where it's, you know, a good enough vantage point, potentially more? And you know, it just, you start looking at the variables and I'm like, guys, just I don't, why would I
If
want to
you're
carry more than one rifle if I
forced,
didn't have to?
no, if you're forced to do that through unit policy or department policy, then I get it, right? If I was not allowed to use my own gas gun, precision gas gun, and I was forced to use that bolt gun, then guess what? Running in that backpack and deploying with my short barrel rifle is what I would have had to do my entire career. It is what it is if you're forced to do it, and I get that. But given the choice, why not condense? Why not get a little bit of the best of both worlds and condense it down into one weapon system? Again, these are just my opinions and my opinions only. They do not reflect anybody else's opinions in the entire world. I don't know if everybody realizes this, but you and I can both have opinions, and somebody listening to this can have a different opinion, and everybody's going to be okay.
No, that's not.
No.
Have you been on the internet? That's not how this works. That's not. Guys get pissed over, you know, like you said, a rifle versus receiver in a naming convention. But I mean, it does. It highlights the point of if you're talking about from a civilian standpoint, in the event that you think you might actually need something like this, why not have a platform that could bridge that gap, right? You can actually engage both near and far targets with. So like, I think I know you mentioned offset red dots, and a lot of guys are like in love with the piggyback idea versus a 45. I think
Fun.
it doesn't really matter. Like if you're going to be aggressively running nods, I would say maybe invest in the piggyback just because it'd probably be easier.
Sure.
That's if you're doing that.
And I have nothing against doing that. I have nothing against that at all. I don't like the
Works.
height over, the height over board on that.
Oh yeah.
It didn't play well with me. And this may be
You could
one of
just learn
those like
some. You could just learn some new holds, dude.
that's again, I don't want to have to do that. Maybe that's a boomer thing. I don't know. I don't.
The future is now, old man. Come on. Everyone's, you gotta run 3-inch risers and shit for your red dots now.
I'll accept that criticism. If that's an old man thing to do, I will accept that criticism.
I used to think that it was, honestly, but the more I shoot, the more I do it. I do just do what you like. I don't love having to turtle down behind the gun, so I run a little bit of a riser. I don't do like the fucking GBRS riser because that shit's like your holdovers are damn near 5 inches at that point. But I'll do like a 226 riser or something. Like I'll more natural position for myself.
The only one I found that I liked was Sklar Works, their 193. 193 worked really, really well. But even then, I just didn't want to have to redo my holds. And that's, I guess you can say that's laziness on my part. I'll accept that criticism too. And so I just stuck with lower one third.
Well,
But I
there's
don't
something
hate
to be
on
said
anybody
for,
doing it.
yeah, I mean, but there's something to be said for the consistency there, especially if you're going between platforms at your department where you don't want to have to learn two completely different. Like that's the thing with, I mean, as a civilian, we have the benefit, and this goes for scopes too, because there's scope mounts out there that are 193 height, and when I was running one of those, I really really liked that, and I had my red dot on a 45 degree. However, as soon as I got a laser for that setup and was like, hey, I'm gonna try running this with tubes, and I realized moving to piggyback, like, okay, now I'm at like a 3-inch mount with that red dot. I'm like, my chin is barely touching the fucking stock. Like, this is not ideal. And I moved everything back down. So I went to a 1.5-inch mount, piggyback the red dot. It works way better in my opinion. It's also better like in the prone, I think, if you're at a 1.5. But it's all preference. Like you can learn how to do almost anything.
But that you say so you touched on something else. A comfortable shooter, especially, and I have said this all the time, a comfortable shooter in the precision world is a more accurate shooter. So if you're uncomfortable behind your gun or you're uncomfortable in your position, it is going to affect your accuracy. So if you prefer certain scope mount heights and risers on your buttstock versus not, and so some of that adjustability that you have, I'm all for that because you need to be comfortable, especially once you start to move out of prone, which I always advocate for, especially in my world, because everybody, and I don't know much, if the civilian world is this bad, but I know that on the elite sniper world, it is very rare to see a lot of guys. I think it's getting better, but it's still really rare to see a lot of guys get out of prone because it's the most comfortable position, right? It's easy to shoot from. It's hard to shoot from alternate positions and improvised positions. So it matters even more there. So the way that you connect to that rifle, it has to be comfortable and it has to be repeatable so that you can hit the same thing every time or it's going to affect your accuracy 100%.
Yeah, and that, I mean, and that carries over into some of the choices I see people make where, yeah, so I don't know that. Those kinds of odd solutions, if people really understand, right, like some of the nuance behind what they're doing, like what they're losing, right, by making a simple change to a small stock or things like that. You know what I mean?
Well, and that in the precision world, like you can go down a lot of rabbit holes on that, and there is some experimentation, right? Like you can take bags, for example. There's a ton of experimentation you can do with just bags alone. So different kind of stocks and risers. There's a lot of trial and error to it. So I get people copying some of the stuff that they see sometimes. But don't just copy it just for the sake of doing it. Copy it because maybe that's a good starting point for you. And then you run it a few times, go run some matches or take it out to range, whatever you need to do. And then you go, okay, this small piece of this doesn't work. Let me change this one thing. okay, this one thing I could do a little bit better. Let me change this one thing. But I mean, it's hard. The prisoner world's hard without spending money with packs and bags and mounts, and there's just all kinds of stuff.
Well, I just picked up my first bag, a rear bag from Flatline, just because I was told anyways, it will help with making those small adjustments, with your sight picture and stuff. And but I know there's like I was absolutely amazed at what some of these fucking companies charge for fucking was it 500D Cordura full of sand or plastic pellets and shit. I'm like, dude, I get it. Everyone's got to make a living, but fuck me, man. $120 for a shooting bag?
Well, there's a lot of people that make their own. You know, like the Marine Corps used to do sand socks. They just put sand in an old sock and tie it off, and that would be it. The one that I used when I was with my first team was actually made by a teammate. It was the bag that he ran. So then I tried to make one, and we actually liked each other's bags better, and so we ended up trading. And I still have that one, and it looks like shit. It's all beat up. It's been through all hell and back. It's still a great bag. But I have a couple of those really expensive ones too, for like barricade bags and things like that. Trying to create good positions in certain areas. But yeah, your rear bag is your best friend. That is a make or break thing, and that was a lot of experimentation too, trying to find one that I didn't really have to touch. So the whole goal, if anybody's not super familiar, is to make some adjustments with the bag, squeezing it as it goes higher, or letting some out to let the rifle lower a little bit, without having to do it with your actual hand. So you want the bag to be able to do everything. The less input that you can have, the better on the gun. So, or at least with your body. So yeah, your rear bag is your best friend. It can do a lot.
Yeah, I haven't really played with it a ton. Josh built one out of like it was a sock, and like I think it was just like a literally a, he went to the store and bought like some 6 millimeter airsoft pellets, whatever. Didn't even take it out of the bag, just shoved that in the sock and tied it off, and it actually worked really well. It probably better than the one I just bought, to be honest with you. And I haven't used that one yet, so I could still be wrong, but it seemed like the one that he made himself was better than the one that I purchased.
And there's some personalization to that, right? No, you companies don't know especially what you need. You kind of know what you need or what you're looking for in a bag. So a lot of times it's easier to make one. And the trick is to kind of get something that is, very pliable and like sand, but doesn't absorb the water that sand does, which it's kind of the downside to your old school sand socks. So yeah, you're like your plastic beads. You just can't get them too big, because it'll just be like a big mushy, like beanbag chair kind of thing. It won't have any rigidity to it. You want something that can hold some rigidity to it, that's still movable, but then doesn't absorb water.
Yeah, that's I was looking at stuff online. Guys mentioned like kinetic sand, and then like the airsoft BBs and stuff. And I'm like, well, it's an interesting concept, but then I was like, well, I don't know, sand just seems really heavy compared to some of like the BBs and stuff that you can get out there now. And maybe if you are carrying it over a distance, that's a consideration. The one I got wasn't super expensive. It's Flatline Fiber Co. I know a lot of guys rave about it. In addition to some other companies that are maybe a little bit better in terms of like the precision bag, like game and stuff. I also have people recommend Armageddon gear. Never tried it. Looks really nice.
Well, and again, there's different ones. Some people like triangle shaped rear bags. Some people like square ones. I like squared ones. Some people like the cylinder ones. You're kind of limited only by your imagination, but it also takes a little bit of trial and error too. So I, again, with most everything else, I bought a couple, didn't like those. There's not much of a resale market for rear bags, so
Yeah,
can't
shooting bags.
really do anything with them, but you just kind of find what you like through using it. And again, in competition, a lot like on the USPSA and the PCSL side, if you do longer range sniper matches, or your precision rifle matches that are glad I'm glad that they're becoming more popular, but they'll teach you the things that are good and bad about your setup. Like the st these stages are the great equalizer. So if something's not working, this stage will let you know. You're not going to be able to beat, like the stage is going to let you know. It's going to throw that wrench in, and it is going to show you the thing that you need to correct. You're not going to be able to overpower it or outsmart it, or I want to do this specific thing no matter what, and I'm going to make it work, and I'm going to have the best time and the best hits. No, it doesn't work that way.
I mean, it'd be
So,
nice if it did, but
yeah, it'd be
you know,
nice. I mean, that then we could just all force our great ideas to work, but that's not how it's not reality.
right. No, I mean, and it's just it's one of those things that makes it just a very like again, shooting is shooting, but it's kind of a different animal when we start talking about the application of that skill. I mean, it's one of the like I was always one of those people where I'm like, I don't want to swap out my trigger, right? Like, I just want to if I can't run a mil-spec trigger well. It's a me thing. I need to keep getting better, getting faster, whatever. When I started actually like playing with a precision trigger, had a buddy win one in a raffle and give me the SSAEX. Like,
Yeah, those are
I was
nice.
like, I had never experienced that before. I was like, holy shit. Like, I'm gonna sound like the biggest asshole in the world when I go on, you know, when I record and talk about how I double back on that. But I mean, for the application, yes, I think the guys that take them out to the range and just, you know, mag dump and stuff, I'm like, all right, cool. You're not actually getting anything out of that. But
No, you're not using it as it's intended to use. If you go out there and you're really in tune to the movement of it and what it does, you won't want to use another trigger.
Have you messed any of the ones like so the SSAE and stuff? Those are, I think they're two stage, right? So there's a little bit of take up, and then you have a really nice, crisp break to it. Have you messed any of the single stage? Those are the ones where it's just like you're already at the wall when you start applying pressure, right?
I had Geissele's single stage on a old Daniel Defense Mark 18 that I was running.
Okay.
But if you're not like spot on with your trigger discipline and you're not ready to pull the trigger, when you touch the trigger, don't get one of those.
Yeah.
Because when you look at it, it's gonna pull.
That's what I got one for my wife as a Christmas gift to put in her because she doesn't when she comes out to range now, we just we're gonna shoot long range. Like she's got like the Vortex 3-15, the Viper, on her 16-inch 5.56 gun. So like it's got a big old 3-chamber muzzle brake on it, you know, we got her a suppressor now and a bipod and everything. So very much set up to be just she's just gonna shoot from a bench and everything, right? But put a 2 or 2 to 2.5 pound CCI, I think, or whatever, or CCM. I can't fucking remember. CMC, that's what it is, right? I was
Oh,
getting there actually. Yeah, CCM makes hockey gear. Yeah, I put one of those in her gun, and I'm like, this actually doesn't break badly. It is a weird feeling though to have no take up to the trigger, like you're just there and. I don't know that I personally love that. We're gonna wait and see how she likes it. But they're pretty affordable for what they
No,
are.
it's yeah, I eventually went away from it. It wasn't for me. If you can master it, by all means, like, good on you. It just I prefer the two stage as well.
Yeah, again, not bad. It just
It's
it
different.
was a weird experience for sure. I feel like if you're one of those guys that really likes the 1911 triggers, like you'll probably like something like that. not to shit on the 1911, but I you know, most modern handguns don't have that's you know feel to it. So I, you know, whatever. I'm happy with my Glocks. But I digress, right? But
Have you
it's
been
been
able to find anywhere to get some like data past you said you only shot past 50? You've only been able to shoot past 50?
No, I was able to get out to 100. That's the video I did recently on the ammo testing and stuff.
That
That
was at
was
100.
at 100, and it was okay. You know, I didn't have as many different kinds of ammo as I would like to go through, but I thought I hit on some of the bigger ones. I mean, I think a lot of people just because of where we're at with availability and the economics right now, I think AAC is a brand a lot of people are starting to buy from just because it's Palmetto always has it in stock. They've always got deals going on it, and it's not the worst shit out there. It's not like Winchester White Box, which I still fucking hate. But you know, I got some Frontier 55 grain and then 62 grain from AAC and then 77 grain open tip match, which I really like now. That's my like new preferred round of choice, I think, with both of the rifles that I had out there. And fuck 62 grain because I couldn't get that to group for shit. I don't understand why. But it grouped worse than the 55 grain did. And that's supposed to be like a 55 grain Frontier, which a lot of guys regard as garbage ammo. And that grouped better for me out of both guns than the 62 grain did. And I don't
Interesting.
understand.
It's the you will never understand it because for some reason for the precision right when you start going down that road, like every gun has a preference on their own and they are particular. And I've done the same thing. I tried three or four separate, very good, reputable brands out of my rifle, and mine likes one specific one of a specific grain. And so I'm not gonna. I don't care what everybody else says. Like, I'm not gonna fight her. I don't want her to get mad at me for putting feeding her crap ammo. So I feed her what she wants, and she performs for me. Were you able to get? Have you been able to get out past 100 or
Not
anything for
yet.
like windage and elevation or anything?
No, but that'll be that it, as long as I can make it out this weekend, that's the precision event at our range
Okay.
is this coming Saturday. So that'll be, and they set stuff up. They have several different targets and stages set up between like 100 out to 600. So you can move between locations and you're not just shooting 400 for 3 hours. You're shooting 100 and then 400 and then 600 and then 200 and then five. You know what I mean? Like you're moving around and you get different positions. Like they'll have like a sawhorse setup that you can, you know, you have to figure out how to support yourself and shoot from that, or if you want to prone out and shoot under it or whatever. So that should be a really telling experience. I think I have both my guns dialed in for the 77 grain. I think
And what optic are you running?
the so the 13.9, our friends, a shameless plug, our friends at American Defense Manufacturing sent me their Mod 2 upper with a 13.9 barrel from Criterion, the core, whatever. And that's fantastic, but it's a 1-6 Vortex Viper, which I
Okay.
love the optic for the affordability. I'm not crazy about that reticle,
And
but it
what
works.
kind is it?
Just a like a standard BDC reticle, like
Oh,
crosshair
okay.
and stuff.
Yeah, that's going to give you some trouble at that match.
At 100, it wasn't great. Just trying to find those little like bright yellow
Yeah.
diamonds. But then the 16-inch SPR. So I just swapped out the barrel to a Ballistic Advantage like fluted stainless steel SPR barrel. That has a Swamp Fox. I think it's their War Horse. Like a 2-10. And that
Okay.
actually is that's I don't know if we were messaging about that, but it has like their sharpshooter MOA reticle
So
and it's
it's
got
an
like
MOA
the Christmas
reticle.
tree. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm not smart enough to calculate mils and everything, so I stay with the MOAs.
All right. So here's my thoughts on that. Because one of my best friends, we talk shit to each other all the time because he's a mil shooter and I'm an MOA shooter. And for me, it's easier for me because I had to self-spot my rounds a lot of times because I was solo a lot, meaning that I had to be able to shoot at a target, and then if it missed, I needed to be able to see the splash of the round myself. I didn't have a spotter to see the round to tell me the adjustments to make. So in my head, I can think quicker in inches. So I know that at 500 at 500 yards, if it hits 5 inches in any direction, well, that's a minute of angle. If it's 10 inches, that's 2 minutes of angle. Like that's easy calculations in my head, and I know on my holdovers, on my hash marks, I know how much to make at that point. So it's a lot easier to me than mills. That being said, if anybody out there shoots mills, I don't automatically hate you or want to persecute you. I promise. It's just how my brain works. And if your brain works the same way, like I can see distances like football fields. I can see in 100 yard increments a lot easier coming from a football background.
Dude, that's just
Then
bullshit. Why do we even have mills? This is America. We don't use, no, the inches, motherfucker. This is,
it's easier. It's at least easier in my head. And I'm a MIL first focal plane. I mean, an MOA first focal plane shooter. I will always be that.
So this 2 to 10, and I know, and it's weird because I know a lot of guys don't or haven't tried Swamp Fox, or you know, like they're not like a huge name in the precision optics world or anything like that. I have really enjoyed that scope. Like its first focal plane is a 34 millimeter. So and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the wider diameter of the tube itself is going to help with light transmission and clarity of your sight picture. Like it's just it's I mean, yes, you have to buy a different mount if you have a 30 millimeter, but
It does allow more light in, yeah.
yeah, light transmission's great. Really impressed with the glass clarity, but for me, like it has locking turrets. Like just presses down and the turrets will lock. I know if you're somebody who likes to dial, then maybe that's not great for you. But then you can also do the zero reset where you take the turret off, right, and reset it. But for theirs, you can do, it's all field serviceable. You literally just take the cap off with like a quarter or a multi-tool or the end of a spent round, and there's no little screw to undo in there. Once you take the top cap or the inner cap of it off, the whole thing just pulls straight off, and there's no little pieces to lose. There's no like, it's done really well in my opinion. And yes, I mean for a 2 to 10, she is a large lady for a 2 to 10 scope, but I've really enjoyed it. I love the reticle. I like the light transmission. Like I said, it comes with like the cattail, whatever, the throw lever included in the package. And all of the packaging actually includes all of your torque settings for the mounts and stuff. So it's like, it's idiot proof, which I really fucking appreciate as somebody that usually gets that shit wrong. Like it's right there on the box, usually in at least two places, like 18 foot pounds, whatever. Like, cool. Good. I'm happy.
Do you know the muzzle velocity on that particular gun?
I do
Have you been able
not.
to? Okay, so that it's gonna be it'll be a little bit difficult when you run this match. You're essentially just kind of walking those rounds out to whatever distance you're shooting. And then you're just gonna have to make a note of your elevation and windage going forward. Obviously, the easiest way to do it is to chronograph the muzzle velocity. Take that and you plug it into your ballistic software. It'll give you a pretty good estimate of how much elevation you should put in the gun and how much windage you should put in the gun. And then you shoot that to verify it. You might have to make some small changes here and there, but if you're just going to go out there and wing it, totally fine. You just
Yep, that's me. 100%.
you're going to have to just be aware that the data may be off a little bit because you won't be shooting from just prone. And you're going to be walking those rounds out. So like if you come to a 300 yard stage and you've never done anything with elevation at 300 yards, that first round maybe hit short. You come up a little bit more, and you're just gonna have to walk them out until you find
So
your
that would be that's literally that's building your dope. Right,
yes.
you're talking
Yeah.
so because there's so our friends at 100 Concepts actually have this little sticker that they've sent out with a couple of the packages I got, where it's just like it's an adhesive sticker and it has your mil dope like a chart written out. So it's got all your distances and then it's got blank spots next to each one where you can fill in all your dope information.
Right.
What that and like so and I'm not asking to be an asshole. What would that look like? Would it literally just be like 300 yards, would you just write in like hold left two down one or something?
Yeah, so it depends on the application. So like in my world, I had an armband, almost like your quarterback armband.
Oh yeah,
It's very
yep.
similar. And
You know,
inside I had
Lucas from T-Rex Arms used a quarterback armband. He talked about it in his precision video. It was really
Nice.
it's different than the tactical ones that they sell out
Okay,
there.
well, I need everybody to understand that I did this before Lucas did. So
You're an innovator, bro. You are. You're pushing the boundaries.
get out of the way, Lucas. Why don't you give me your company? I'm the captain now. So they make the big tactical ones. You can use the quarterback one as well. But yes, inside was a card that had all of my dope in 50-yard increments, all the way out to I think I had like 800 or so. And so all I had to do was, depending on what distance I was during an operation, I knew what my holdovers were, or if it was long enough, and I could dial, and I needed to dial, I could dial. But I had that information already ready to go. And then some of them may have an extra space for you to write specific yardages. So like if you go to an operation, and this is where it kind of transfers over to the PRS world as well. If I'm ranging out certain things in my area of responsibility, I might have specific markers that have specific yardages. So it may be like 157, not just 150. If it is 157 and in a pinch, I'll use my 150 dope, or if it's 357, I may use my 350, whatever it is, right? But if you know that specific thing, that specific yardage, I can see what my specific elevation and windage would be. Same thing for the PRS. They give you time to range the, a lot of, I think most stages do, give you time to range out the targets. And so you can either go with a very general dial or holdover. So if a target is at 377, you might be able to use your 350, but maybe hold a little bit higher, or you can go to 400, hold a little bit lower. Does that make sense? Or you can have an armband or a board that's kind of a small board that's attached to your rifle, and you can write out the specific yardages for every single target on the stage and what that specific elevation and windage hold would be for that specific target. So
So
each
I'll
stage would look different. You'll just erase it. It's almost like a grease pencil or something, or a dry erase board, something small. You'll erase it and then do it for the next stage too.
So operationally, would you guys like, I know we talked a couple other times, you talked about like Overwatch operations and stuff, where obviously you know these events are happening weeks, months, sometimes in advance. Is that something
Right.
where you would like, hey, this is where we're going to hold our Overwatch position, like range find that and then go zero to that, or at least or get that information, or does that not make sense?
No, so you, what I would do was try to pick obviously the best spot, my eyesight or observation post, excuse me. And then from there, I'm going to pick some kind of large marker that exists naturally within that AOR, and I'm going to use that as like as a yardage anchor almost. So like, so let's say that I'm trying to think of an example that I've done. So let's say that one of the Overwatch operations I did like one of the mass gathering ones, which was like a New Year's Eve, the Peach Drop here in Atlanta. Depending on what just I could see in my area of responsibility, to my furthest left might have been some kind of large tree, or there's a car there or something distinguishable, and that is 175 yards away. So I know that anything that is surrounding that particular marker is going to be pretty much 175 yards away, give or take. And then right in the middle, I would find the same something else too. So something distinguishable that I can range, and it might be at 200, 225 yards. So I know that everything around that is going to be about that distance away from me. And then I would do the same thing to my right as well. So I wouldn't zero to each one, but I'm going to find the range to all of these so that I know in a pinch what my holdovers are going to be, because I don't want to have to take the time to dial. In a lot of the operations I did, right? That takes too much time. So I have to use holdovers. I didn't really have to mess with zeroing a lot because the atmospherics in Georgia are in all of the places that I have done operations are pretty much the same. So the only time that I have had to change my zero is when I've gone out of state to do training courses. I had to zero to those atmospherics because I am now hours and hundreds of miles away from my normal home base.
When you say atmospherics, what are you talking about that would have an impact on that?
Oh, that's you're looking at the weather. So cold versus hot, your temperature, your humidity, barometric pressure, your altitude, all of those have influenced the drag on the bullet. And the performance. So certain atmospherics, there's not a lot going on. So there's no real drag on the bullet. So the bullet may zip through the air a little bit faster. Whereas heavy humidity, for example, a lot of moisture in there, those are things that are things that you can't really see, but they are impacting the bullet and they're causing friction and they are slowing that round down. So
I
people
didn't even
kind of
think
get
of
hung
that.
up in that. Do what?
I said I'd never even thought, like I w it makes sense, right? But I would never have considered like, humidity and stuff to be
Yeah.
that impactful.
Yep. So the more things that are in the air, the slower the bullet that is going to go, because there's more things making contact with it, causing friction and slowing it down. the less things in the air. So your really hot days that have no humidity and you're maybe a little bit higher altitude, there's just not a lot going on in the where you are in the air at that time. So your rounds, they just zip right through. So it affects your elevation quite a bit. Not a ton, but like me going from where I am in Georgia to one of the places I really like to go to in Tennessee to shoot, I would have to adjust my zero usually at least 1 1.5 minutes of angle in elevation. So it's not a ton, but it's enough to where it makes a difference the further out I go, right? 1.5 minutes of angle of adjustment is 1 1 minute of angle at 100 is an inch, and then 1.5, inch and a half, not a lot at 100, but as you go out, that
Right. You stack
rat,
that, yeah,
yeah, it
every yards.
magnifies, yeah, and it grows larger and larger and larger, so that becomes a big deal.
What does cold do to the round? Like, and I only ask because, like, when I was doing my ammo testing and stuff, it was like 21 degrees outside. It was not super fucking warm when I was out shooting last.
I never really it depends on the cold, right? If it's like extreme levels of cold, then it'll have an effect because you potentially have a lot going on in the air where you are. But in my experience, those are generally extreme versions of either side where I had to worry about it. It had nothing to do with the normal seasonal changes in temperature that you may experience in your state. So
Well, shit.
I've shot tons of rounds in the summer here in Georgia, and I've shot tons of rounds in the winter. And
What's winter? What, like 48, 58 degrees for you guys? I mean,
it can get down into the 20s and 30s, and nobody,
all
it's terrible.
right.
It's absolutely terrible.
I'll agree with that. I mean, we spent the last 3 months in the 20s and 30s, so I concur. It fucking sucks.
Yeah, so I
But
never really saw there was no real big changes seasonally. And I don't think that you would have now, obviously mine was done with 308. I'm not to say, I don't know enough about precision 5.56 to make a call like that because it's a lighter round and more easily influenced. So the temperature may affect you on shooting your particular round
yeah,
a
I
little
mean,
bit
but
more.
the principle I think still the same, right? Like there's going to be considerations if you change your environment.
Yeah, and so all you're doing is just checking the zero. So seasonally, am I going to check the zero to make sure that there's no changes? Absolutely. Did I find a bunch of deviation in my windage and elevation? No, I did not. Now, if you are shooting places that have a ton of change in altitude and a ton of change in your barometric pressure a lot, then those kind of things come more into play. But all these things you are doing, they're either making your round faster or slowing it down.
And then that, so, and when we look at the velocity, that's going to obviously, if it's slowing it down, it's going to increase drop, right? And you're going to
Yes.
have to
Yeah. So
pull
it'll
high
drop
for that.
sooner, whereas if you can keep that muzzle velocity because there's nothing really affecting it in the air, then it may sometimes hit higher than what your holdover or your turret setting is.
Yeah, see, I was really hoping that the cold was gonna have more of an effect, because then I could, just say that my grouping sucked because of the weather,
Always
and
blame it
then,
on the atmosphere, dude. I don't know what's going on. I think it's the
of
barometric
course.
pressure. Always just spit out barometric pressure, and dude, you're like, hey, he knows what he's talking about. He said barometric pressure. He said the
That's
thing.
a big word, yeah.
He
That's
said the
yeah,
thing.
for sure. And actually, I mean, the grouping wasn't terrible. It was sub MOA with the 77 grain, which is, I don't think it's bad. A couple times I was able to stack rounds, but I was like, man, I really thought it would be a tighter grouping than what it ended up being. But we'll see. I haven't really pushed limits, and I think breathing's an important part of it when you're trying to break that shot, which I'm not good at. But it, you know, it, there were definitely strings where I was like, I felt way better about it. And then when I stopped thinking about, you know, coming to rest and exhale and everything, where, and I think I even said it in the video, I was like, well, yeah, threw that one, and I didn't even know where it went. Or I said it was high, it ended up being low, whatever. I just knew when the shot broke, I was like, that's, you could watch, you know, like where the reticle moves, and just tell that was not good.
Yeah, to me, and that kind of goes into like the cold bore versus cold shooter kind of thing. To me, it's always the shooter that influences the miss, and not really the rifle. Unless if you're trying to make a non-precision rifle a precision rifle, are you going to have some flyers, or is it going to be grouping the best? Probably not. It'll group the best of its ability. But to me, it's like the handgun. If I hold it in a perfectly straight line and I have perfect sight alignment and I pull the trigger, the round's going to go exactly where I'm aiming. The same thing with the precision rifle. You just influence it with the tiniest amount, and all of a sudden you're like, well, that one blew way the fuck off in the forest. I'm not really sure where that one went. So it just becomes more magnified at that point.
Yeah. Well, and then I mean, for people listening, if your circumstances change too, like, keep in mind that if you add a suppressor to that, that also changes the performance, at least to a degree. Is that also true?
So in my experience, yes. I am not an expert enough to say why it was, but I did take the muzzle device off my 16-inch 308 and added a direct thread suppressor on it, and it pulled my groupings down even tighter. Whereas I was averaging without it, the
Yeah.
Lands End
Okay.
guns come out of the box at 0.75 minutes of angle accuracy. They don't release one, or they when they were in business, they didn't release one off the line that didn't hold 0.75 across the board. And then when I added my suppressor, all of a sudden I was getting a lot closer to five, a lot closer to a half minute angle. And I am not going to sit here and try to bullshit anyone to tell you to say why I think it is. I'll just talk about baffles a lot
Yeah,
and
people.
say the
Yeah.
thing and say
Right.
the buzzwords. And but no, I in my experience with the can that I was using at the time, with my rifle, I got what appeared to be an increase of accuracy out of it. Now, if anybody wants to, when you post this, if anybody wants to skewer me for not knowing or enlighten me, I'm all for it. Please give me the scientific reason and the mechanisms behind it. I like learning new things. But to me it was threaded on, it goes boom, and every time it goes boom, it's the rounds are all touching, and I like that. It made me feel very, very good inside, and so I went with
Yeah, I would too, honestly. I mean,
it.
if I could make mine do that, I'd feel good about it. Do you think that having a if someone was building out the rifle for like your application, like right for law enforcement or Overwatch, whatever, suppressor necessary?
Not necessary, but I desired, yes. I ended up buying. I liked the performance I got out of the combination so much that the company I was that suppressor was pretty much like an indefinite T&E that the company gave me to use. So when I left that particular team, they wanted that can back, so I gave it to them. But and then I'm buying my own because I liked the performance of both of those together. Now there is a downside to it, especially on the gas side. If you run, it's hot outside and you're running a bunch of rounds, you're going to get some heat and some mirage off of that can, which is going to make your target look very wonky. It's going to make it look like it's completely sideways at times. You're going to think that you're holding one spot on the target, and you're not anywhere close because that mirage is messing with you. That's why you see a lot of the suppressor covers, obviously, try to mitigate that heat, try to mitigate that mirage. So there is a downside. There's no perfect solution to everything. Would I encourage people to have one? Yes. Yeah. From a hearing protection standpoint, but also what appears to be a performance standpoint, yes, I think that I think that it's a great combo.
Yeah, I mean, I think over, I mean, well, a overall signature reduction, whether it's visual or audible, the benefits are really, really there. But shit, I mean, like, I just bought my second one in October, and it was like 23 days from the day I purchased it online to the day that I fucking went into the shop and picked it up.
See,
Like,
the fact that you told me that means I have to go buy one tonight now because the
yeah,
wait times are so low.
you totally should. Like, under a month, my first one took me 6 months. I had a buddy before that that it took him 14 months to get his approved, and
Yeah,
that's why I'm
mine
so
was 18. Mine sat in ATF jail for 18 months before I got it.
18
And now
months.
everybody else is like, yeah, man, I got mine within 48 hours. It was awesome. Yeah, it's great. Thanks. Appreciate that, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you're a cop, like, aren't isn't that shit supposed to work faster for you? Like, one would think, you
I
know?
so the when I had that when I had my Daniel Defense Mark 18, and I sent in my paperwork to them, it was appearing to take forever. So I actually emailed them and said, "Hey, I'm going to use this on duty. Can we hurry this the fuck along?" And they sent me it. I mean, I didn't use that phrase. They would have showed up at my door asking for to search my house, but they got it back to me fairly quickly after that. And I don't know if it helped or if I just got. It was just my turn to get mine back. So you would think that, yeah, I could have a little professional courtesy going on. No, they
Well,
can't
I
really
just
give a
think that
shit.
if you're gonna be shooting, I mean, I just like don't I can't overstate to folks, like, don't be the fucking asshole shooting your 18-inch 308 gas gun with like a four chamber muzzle brake and no fucking can on it. A
That
little courtesy
was,
to your
dude, that was
neighbors.
me. That is the Accuracy International guns that my first team have. They don't have cans and they have the muzzle brakes on it. It is so bad that my buddy who I referenced earlier, when we went through sniper school, we had to stack our bags in between each other because the concussion from this muzzle brake was so bad that it would like rock your whole body and he would leave with a headache every day. So we had to make like this makeshift wall between us to mitigate some of that. It's ridiculous. And then screw
That's rough.
signature reduction. You're gonna know when I shot that because the trees are gonna bend over, every leaf and all the dust is gonna kick up. Like you're gonna know where I'm at for sure.
Yeah, it's well, it's like we had a guy come up to one of our range days. We were running drills and everything, and I think he was running like a 10.5 inch, just like a 5.56 AR, and he had a brake on it. I'm like, all right, it's a little bit. What I mean, whatever. And then we break for lunch, and he comes back, and he's got like an 18-inch 308 with the same kind of brake on it. I was like, dude, fucking weak, bro. Like, Christ. And then we find out after the fact he has suppressors. He just didn't bring them that day. I was like, motherfucker,
Yeah.
dude, come on, man. Like, it's entertaining the first couple times. Then when you like hand it off to everybody, and they're all mag dumping, 20 rounds of 308 at the target. It's like, okay, now I'm. You're just annoying, dude. Like, stop it,
Why
please.
though? The 308 rounds I like to use are not like mag dump price points.
I
I
don't
don't
think any
understand.
308 is at mag dump price point,
I don't
personally.
understand why you would want to do that, but okay.
When you're young and dumb, I don't, I mean, I don't, that's all write it off too. I don't fucking know. I
Yeah.
think that for, I mean, I never used to subscribe to the concept because I didn't want to come to terms with the financial reality of it. But like, if you're gonna build a gun that you want to be a precision tool, like, feed it good ammo, buy the good
Yeah.
components, like, and that's like really what I mean, the whole discussion is getting at, right? Like, you can't just buy whatever fucking PSA rifle, which I've had a couple, not a big deal, but you can't just grab a 16-inch rifle, throw whatever 3-9 scope you found for under $200 on it, and call it an SPR.
Right.
A lot of those scopes fucking suck balls. That's why it's under $200. And the quality of the rifle and the barrel are probably a little bit questionable. Like,
No, you need, I always say this, you need a good barrel, you need a good optic with a good mount, and you need a good trigger on it.
yeah, and the mount is the one that really kicks you in the nuts, because you just spend, $800 to $1,500 on glass, and then you got to drop another 3 to 5 on a good mount. Like, you could get away with some good rings, but even at that, they're probably over $100, and it's going to look a little bit weird, but
I've seen people drop tons of good money on a very good optic and then put a trash mount on it to save money, which makes no sense.
Yeah, well, I th they don't realize the reality of, I think, the impact that that's going to have. You know, like it's different with red dots and stuff because your relative distances are very different. And now a lot of them, right? Like your EOTechs and stuff. I think you run an EOTech, right? Like the
On
mount
my
is
short on my SBR,
shotgun. Yeah. So like the mount is built into the gun, and then as long as your upper receiver's in spec, you're totally fine. I don't think guys fucking realize like, hey, that scope mount like impacts a whole hell of a lot. That's why you see dudes with those PRS guns and stuff, and they put like bubble levels on the scope. And I think I've even seen some folks where it's like on the scope and on the chassis. Maybe I haven't, I don't know, but like I've seen a lot of setups with a whole bunch of shit attached to it to try and be as precise as possible. And you don't need it all, right? But it does highlight the point that those little deviations can pay big dividends in your accuracy down range, meaning you don't realize it, but it'll cause a miss if you're trying to really be effective, really reach out, you know, push accuracy and stuff.
No, and I'm way behind the cool guy curve on the newest, greatest like precision equipment. If my gasser still has the Harris bipod that I deployed with,
No, dude, that's what I bought. Harris is good shit. I mean,
I
it's the
don't
extending
plan on
one, but.
same thing. I have the extending one. I don't plan on changing it anytime soon. When I did go to I went to I think I was still on the team at the time. I went to a competition prep course at the place in Tennessee that I like to go to, and it's just getting you used to, or like introducing you to what it's going to be like to shoot competition PRS stuff. And there was a guy with a bolt rifle that had a like a rail underneath it, and the rifle can slide along the bipod
Oh, the
depending
ARCA
on,
rail. Yeah.
is that what it is?
I think it's called an ARCA rail. Yeah.
I was like, what kind of sorcery is this?
Oh,
I don't get it. And
yeah.
so
That's the new
I'm
hotness,
still,
dude.
yeah, well, and that again, that was years ago too. So I have no idea what is even out now. So, and I, again, I don't, is it practical for my application? No, probably not. So, and
You
that's
could
the other
probably
thing.
get work to pay for it. Just put it on an expense report. Tell them it's necessary.
I
They don't
mean,
look at things like that.
my department has money, but I don't think I can convince them to pay for anything like that.
Just gotta
But
just bend the truth a little bit. Tell them that it's essential or something.
I don't mind showing up with the lower gear that I'm going to be. My USPSA and PCSL stuff is the same way. I run my duty belt, so it's not the fastest holster. It's not the fastest mag pouches. They're not canted, they're not magnet.
You should look into the canted ones. They're good.
I used to run some cant, but I actually went back to just vertical mags. But anyways, my gasser is the same way. So I will probably always show up with the slowest stuff. But it, again, I get training value out of those stages that I can apply to my operations, and that's obviously the most important thing to me. If your goal is to get out there and win, and you're probably going to have some on the precision side, you're probably going to have to have some of that equipment.
Yeah, I think there's just a nest like a good bipod. I had people like, oh, hey, yeah, you spent $100. Actually, the Harris is $100 on sale. It's the only reason I grabbed it. I picked up a $25 one off Amazon. It works just as good. Like, I don't know, man. I have a hard time. Like, would I buy a shooting bag off Amazon? Yes. Would I buy my bipod seriously off of Amazon? Probably not anymore. Like, why is one 150 and one is $25? Like, there's got to be a reason there.
Have you invested in a tripod yet?
I have not. I've looked at them. I tried shooting on a tripod a couple times. We actually, the last range date we had in December, we were confirming zero, and we had a guy out there who just didn't want to fucking prone out to confirm his zero. So this is actually making the counterpoint for me liking tall optics, but he bought the Unity riser for the absolute height EOTech, right? But then he got the lower third EOTech unit. So instead of having that like 226 height, it was actually some bastard like 2.42 or some fucked up whatever holdover. And then he wouldn't prone out to confirm his zero. He used somebody's tripod, and zeroing on a tripod, I'm convinced, is the dumbest shit you could possibly fucking do, because there's so much input on that bitch. They actually had to walk him in from 50 yards to like 15, get him on paper at 15, then back him up to 25, and then back him up to 50 to like, it took like an hour to zero this guy's fucking 10-5 piston gun.
The further like, you get from the ground, the less stable you get.
Yeah, and I mean, it's fine if you're target shooting or whatever, but if you're trying to actually zero, and I used to hate it. I used to hate proning out until I actually just fucking did it. Got a good bipod, and it make, and even, you don't need a bipod. Like, use your fucking rifle bag and, you know, use the bottom of the mag and your elbows. You build a, and it's way more efficient if you're not wanting to spend half your day fucking with your zero. I will never again argue that point with anybody. I think it's
no,
just...
I agree. Are you going to get one? Do you think you're going to invest in one, or are you going to forego it for a while?
I'll probably forego it for a while, honestly. Unless the wife wants one, in which case then maybe we'll, you know, I'll spend a couple $100, get like a fat boy or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of options. There's really good. But even still, then the way that your rifle interfaces with your tripod is a whole separate rabbit hole on what you want. And like, I'm throwing in like an...
fancy rails
and saddles.
Slides. Yeah,
that's,
I know.
What I'm saying. See, I am super far behind on that. I'm still running the like a hog saddle, which is just the clamp that you screw in. And
oh yeah, that's the one that we shot with. That's my buddy has it. And that's all it is. It's just the vice, basically.
Yeah. So I am way behind on the newest, coolest thing. I'm whatever.
Just go to your wife, tell her you got to forego the family vacation, because it's really important to the people on the internet that you understand how this real works.
All of your advice has been terrible in this episode that we've done, and I'm not taking any of it.
Let's see. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's some sound reasoning to that, but man, this has been fun, dude. It's always a blast getting to sit down and chat, and hopefully helpful. I'll definitely be reaching out like after this weekend, let you know how I did, probably shit the bed. You know, first time past 500, or actually first time past 200, it'll be rough, but hopefully still a valuable learning experience for me.
No, I agree. No. And again, I appreciate you having me on. I always love to come on here and converse with you, man, about any topic that I have any kind of relevancy or knowledge in. No, when you go out there, have fun. Just take something to take some notes to where your windage and elevation are. That way you can have some kind of dope card when you leave, or data card when you leave, and you'll be fine.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how it goes. I mean, there's actually a qualifier for it, which I'm not worried about, because I did go out and confirm zero, but you have to shoot like a sub MOA group at 100.
Oh, okay.
Which isn't bad. I mean, as long as you use semi-decent ammo, it should be fine.
Yeah, you should be fine. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you post how badly you do. It'll be good.
Yep. Yeah, it'll be great fodder for the internet. Everyone can tell me that I need to lose more weight and learn how to shoot. Two things that I'm already keenly aware of, but
just make sure you call it a receiver and not a rifle from now on.
Yeah. Yeah. Duly noted for the people that care about such things. But yeah, man, always good to catch up, brother. Appreciate you making the time. And as always, I will be in touch. Stay safe out there.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
So we did have a mild bit of technical difficulty in the middle of the recording there. So I was able to cut it out and kind of continue the conversation, just talking about some of the changes people make to their platforms, right? And not really understanding the impacts, right? Especially, you know, in a precision application, right? That a small change, like going from something like a full size stock with a good cheek weld to it, right? To one of those small, low profile, like K-series stocks that I know a lot of people were really enamored with for a while, on like a, you know, 10 3-inch upper receiver with the 1-8 and the, you know, mini stock, and you're not really doing yourself any favors and be able to use that as a precision oriented platform. But a lot of guys were building those, and, you know, hashtag mini recce, things like that, which I think I've said on this podcast before that I really wasn't a fan of. But that's what we kind of had to work around there, was that stretch of the conversation. I think with that context, maybe what we are saying makes a little bit more sense. But certainly I think all of that, you know, good information, especially because we're seeing this resurgence. I know for a lot of us, it never really went away, but we're seeing this resurgence of the popularity around the SPR style rifles and the modern Minuteman and the applications of magnified optics and, you know, red dots and piggyback mounts and offset mounts and things like that, and building a do-all sort of rifle, you know, a GPR, if you will. And I think that it's important to understand, when you're building these out, like, it's hard to make a bad choice as long as you understand the impacts of that choice. So, I mean, we got into it a lot, right, with JT talking about barrel length. You know, we talked about caliber. I talked about optic. I think, you know, the optic and the brand, it, as long as you're getting something reputable, you know, don't spend $250 on your scope and expect it to, you know, move mountains. But if you're a 50 cent shooter, a $250 scope is going to be great for you. But, you know, that's a relative statement, right? Like, what kind of shooter do you really want to be? But I digress. So I know we got into a bunch of stuff. We talked about bags and shooting positions and applications, you know, bolt versus gas guns, all that stuff, which I you know, it's all the stuff that I was hoping that we were going to be able to get into in this discussion. And hopefully it helps some of you guys as you're looking at either building out a rifle, or maybe you're taking an existing build and you're looking at, you know, swapping out for a better barrel and a better optic, or you know, a shorter or longer barrel, you know, whatever it is you're seeking to do with that. Hopefully this helped to fill in some of the gaps and answer some of the questions that you might have. And certainly, you know, there's some stuff we didn't cover, and maybe the context that we did cover a lot of that in isn't exactly what you're looking for. You know, there's a lot of really good resources out there in this realm. The guys at Bruiser Industries, you know, Joe, certainly Adrian over at Sidewinder Concepts. You know, he's been on the podcast before. Ridgeline Defense come to mind. There's a lot of long distance precision type specialists out there. JT is a good friend of mine. We talk very frequently, and, you know, I'm always happy to have him on because I think we just have a good discussion with it. But he served in a law enforcement capacity, which in my regard and opinion makes the urban sniper application, if you will. I use that term extremely loosely, you guys, extremely loosely. But his perspective lends itself well to that. And I think that's what a lot of us, at least from the prepared civilian perspective, look for and value in these kinds of interviews and discussions and conversations. Like I said, you know, his input, and he said it multiple times, right? That's a lot of this stuff was just his opinion, and, you know, he's made some decisions based off of his own experiences and what he likes. You know, we got into mils versus, you know, MOA. A lot of guys swear that you're not a real shooter unless you're shooting in mils, and I don't even know enough to criticize the validity or the ego right behind that statement. There's a lot of guys that can do both. Okay. There's some guys that do one or the other really, really well. And there's certainly probably guys that are able to give more context and explain with both, you know, why one is going to be more advantageous than the other. But ultimately it comes down to your own skill set, which we did talk about here. And hopefully that point resonates with you guys. But regardless, thank you guys so much for hanging out and listening this week. You know, we're rolling through things. We're almost through March. It's crazy. I know we got a couple really good episodes lined up for the next couple weeks here as we roll out of Q1 and into Q2 of 2025. And the weather is finally breaking, so a lot more interesting stuff going to be going on in the next several months here. I'm looking forward to all of it. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. If you've made it this far, really, really appreciate it. Make sure you guys hit that subscribe. Make sure you sign up for the notifications and everything, so when we drop new episodes weekly, and then obviously, you know, the sit rep episodes as the current events pop themselves up, you're covered for that, and you have, you know, first alarm on when new content is available. Thank you guys for the time, and God bless. Stay safe out there, and like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.